first will be the roll call of the Deer Management Ad Hoc Committee meeting. John Flynn, please just indicate you're here. Lori Gillard, don't mispronounce your name, I apologize.
I'm here, no, you said it.
Joe Luking, Catherine Christmas.
Here.
Ingrid Liu, Annette Madden.
Here.
John Rover?
Rager.
Rager, great. Ronald Lamar, Dawn Mizgala, Kathleen Hughes.
Here.
Dan Hollenbach?
Here.
Patty Hennick?
Here.
And Tom Cargi here. So, normally, we did have agendas, do we pass them on?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, so, this is what the agenda's gonna look like, it's the, just the normal process of the village. Thank you. A point that Patty raised at our meeting last week, if you could, because people may be listening to this, probably not this one, but down the road, when you do intend to speak, please press the button in front of you. Leave it off when you're not talking, because otherwise there's just too much ambient noise, but if you wanna, you know, if you're gonna say something, just press the button first. So normally we would have public comment, but there's no one here to comment, so we will just move on to the member welcome and introductions. I'll start. My name is Tom Cargi. I am a village trustee. I've been a village trustee now for 6 years, going on 7 years, God. Hi. You didn't have the My Favorite Thing thing in there.
Well, I didn't write it down there. Okay,
oh, so what, say My Favorite Thing?
I could just explain this. Okay. So what we were gonna do as far as introducing ourselves, if you can give your name, if you wanna say a couple things about yourself, but one in particular thing that I thought we could do is just kind of a sort of icebreaker is that if you could share a favorite something, favorite food, favorite pastime, favorite book, whatever, something favorite, just to kind of like get to know each other a little bit more. We're going to be working together a little bit. And so I'll start as far as that goes. So I'm Patty Hennick. I'm village trustee. This is my third year being a trustee. I've been in town going on 20 years, I guess. And I will say my favorite thing to do is game night with family and friends. I love playing games, particularly word games, and never fails to have lots of laughs and a good time. And so that's one of my favorites. Anyhow.
Thanks, Patty. My name is Oswald Cosbur, and I live on Monroe Avenue in River Forest. I've been a resident since 1990. And first of all, thank you very much for getting selected for this committee. I look forward to working with you and seeing how we can come up with various different options and solutions and an open discussion on this. It's very important. You asked for one of the favorite things that I like to do or eat or do. There's so many things, I think from the most recent experience, a nice dinner, a roast duck à l'orange with a nice wine that goes along with it, along with, what's that? Yeah. So I was just finishing up. Hi, Julie. And so I was talking about my favorite dinner, which I share with my family every year on my birthday, which just happened just a few days ago. So welcome, thank you. Nice meeting every one of you.
Hi, Kathleen Hughes. I live on Keystone. I am somewhat of a lifelong resident. I was born and raised in River Forest and moved away to go to college and live downtown for 10 years and then moved back. I have three kids, and I'd say my favorite thing is probably just hanging with my kids and my husband and trying to embrace the winter and enjoying movies by the fire. but I'm happy to be on the committee, and I know a lot of people have a lot of strong feelings on this, and for the avoidance of doubt, I come in with a very open mind, and I have done a lot of research from various angles. So I look forward to working with you all.
Hi, I'm Catherine Christmas. Grew up in Oak Park for the first 18 years of my life and then lived elsewhere for 12, then back in River Forest for 15. So you can add that up and figure out how old I am. I have two kids in high school in the community. I'm a travel agent, so I'll list my favorite country outside the U.S., which is Japan. So I do a lot of Japan travel. And what else? I got involved in this because I live on Bonnie Brae and Quick, which were where a lot of the deer camped out last year. And I'm an animal lover, but also a gardener. So I'm getting all the vibes from all the different sides on this. And I think that's it. Favorites and background. There.
Hi, I'm John Riker. I live on Greenfield. I've lived there for about 2 years. Before that, we were about 18 years on Keystone as well. Thank you for inviting me to this committee. I look forward to it and certainly coming in with a very open mind. Favorite, I guess I'll say my favorite book, and it would be yours too if you read it. Kingsley Amis, Lucky Jim. There is no other second.
She's ready to get
out. You've read it?
No, I haven't. No, I'm just seeing a pen out over there.
Hi, I'm Annette Madden, and I don't think I turned my thing on, but I have lived here for 23 years. My husband was born and raised here. We raised our children, and I'm looking forward to this because I also came into this. I don't really have a strong opinion one way or another. I live far enough away that it doesn't affect me, but ultimately it does affect me, so I'm just kind of to learn more, see the best way to handle this. And my favorite thing is also while traveling, spending time with my family and gardening. So thanks for having me.
All right, I think it works. And my name's Dan Hollenbach. My wife and I moved to River Forest 18 years ago, and we have a lot of family here too. My father grew up here, and we're at 610 Park, so just down the street. Really like the village. So, favorite thing, I gotta say, I'm a kind of a dog lover. So I got two dogs right now, and I do a lot with them. I spent a lot of time at Thatcher Woods because of my dogs. Go to dog shows, kind of stuff like that. So if you like dogs and want to talk dogs. All right. Thanks for having me. Oh, no. Please, I'm not there yet, but maybe someday when I got some time.
So my name's Lori Gillard, and I've lived in the village 23 years, and I never intended to live in the village even more than 3 years. We moved out here from California, planning to be here temporarily. And we ended up renting a house and buying a house across the street over on the 200 block of Forest. So I live in the house next to the park. And if you have kids with the ducks, my house is the house that had the ducks. If you know, that's me. Yeah, but anyway. Yeah. So, okay. So, that's where, anyway, I won't go into the ducks, but let's just say, yeah. So I would say my favorite thing, I love riding my bike on the prairie path in the summer, and we do it every single weekend. So we'll go out to like Geneva, or we'll go out to, we went out to Aurora. It's really great. So if you're interested in any of that, it's something to really take advantage of because the prairie path starts right over at the end of the blue line. So Concordia, it's like a highway. So you're off the streets and you just ride. So I was really interested in this because, and I also come from kind of scientific background. So I'm interested in looking at the evidence so that whatever decision we come up with, it's like, cause I feel the same way. I could go either way cause I've done some research too. So I'm just really interested in just hearing about the problem and, just the potential solutions. But I try to be objective about things, so I'm just really glad I was able to be a part of this. So,
hey everybody, hi. Sorry again, I was late. I'm Julie Armstrong. Thank you for having me here. Let's see, I've lived in the Oak Park River Forest area for 16 years. I've been in River Forest for 8. I live on Thatcher. I have 2 boys, 11 and 7, and I'm a chief commercial officer for a financial technology firm. Let's see, I used to say that my favorite thing in the world was travel until I had a job that's all I do. I love dogs, and I would say I love hiking in Colorado. That's probably like my number one thing to do. As far as aside, I'm from Kentucky originally. I'm not from the Illinois area, which seems to be an outlier, maybe. I've lived literally all over the world. I've lived in New York, Oregon, France, Italy, and China. And I am definitely an animal lover, but I got involved with this. I showed up to the very last kind of meeting before the committee was formed because I live across the street from the deer. And I just started seeing a lot of divide around the community, and I got concerned. And I'm certainly a very objective person. I do want to get to the right place, and I feel like we need to do that from a fact-based place. And that's what I'm here to kind of work with you all on. And honestly, to meet some neighbors could be an added benefit. So thanks.
I should supplement. My favorite book is Player Piano by Kurt Vonnegut. Read it in high school, still love the book. And it was incredibly prescient, too, if you read about it. But so I guess we'll start. We've passed out the resolution that they created this committee. No, I passed out already. Yeah. No, it's fine. Oh, I'm sorry. You were. Just really quickly, I mean, the obvious purpose is in... Paragraph C, but just to sort of summarize, what we've been asked to do by the village board is to come up with a plan to address first of all, I guess to identify if there's a problem, and then if we all agree there is a problem, to come up with a plan. Included in that plan is a community survey. That's one of the mandatory things that we have to do. We also need to hold forums. I mean, the resolution requires us to hold one. I think we intend on holding more. Patty and I both feel that this committee can serve a great benefit to the community, if only to give an opportunity for people to talk about the issues on deer, either for or against deer. And so I'm not sure how many we're going to hold, but we do plan on holding at least more than one. And I think what we envision is different sorts of community forums. So one on Lyme disease, one on measures you could take to protect your garden, that sort of thing. Again, this is all going to be fleshed out by this committee. And bear in mind, Patty and I are just we're each one vote. So this is going to be a committee decision. It's not going to be dictation from us, because we have no more voting authority than any of you guys do, because we're all just one vote. So at this point, Patty has undertaken most of the responsibility of putting this together. But in the future, we're going to expect committee members to participate. Patty, I'll speak to that later, but that's one of the things that I hope everyone anticipated, that there is going to be homework involved in this. There's a lot of websites. Patty has pointed me to a number of websites. There's a lot to read. But I think for us to do a good job, we really have to undertake that work. It shouldn't just be, well, I got deer in my backyard, so therefore there's a problem. It should be, let's look for, and I hate the word, but it actually does apply, let's look for a holistic way of dealing with this. And that can only come from, unless someone, and actually Joel Luking, or John Luking.
Joel.
Actually does have experience doing this. It's unfortunate he couldn't be here tonight, but he'll be a great resource for us, because he's done this for other communities. So I think that was a great addition. You're all great additions, but I mean, he has particular knowledge that I lack, at least. One thing I would like to say, unfortunately, this issue gets heated, as we can see from our many board meetings. And I trust in this committee that we're all going to treat each other like adults, and that we're all going to be civil to each other. And, kind of a golden rule thing, if you don't want something said to you, don't say that same thing to someone else. We can disagree, but let's not be disagreeable. Because I think, one, it makes work much harder to do. If you have people that are just mad at each other, they're not going to listen. So you've lost whatever your point, whatever argument you were trying to make has lost its edge, because I've already tuned you out. And I hope that doesn't happen. And I'm sure that we can all be professional and be responsible and be just nice people. But I just wanted to get that up front, because this, for some reason, does tend to bring out the worst in people. So that was my piece.
Okay, so as Tom has even already kind of touched on.
Can I step on your presentation?
No, not at all. Okay. We're going to complement each other. We're going to work in a team here. In terms of expectations, the next point on our agenda, I just kind of wanted to further what Tom was saying as far as how we want to proceed here and to also really kind of help explain more the purpose of this task force. It will be explained a little bit further on the other handout that we have, but when we're looking at the reason for doing this committee, it's in part, as Tom said, is to help identify what problems are we seeing, what issues are people having related to the deer. So we kind of want to get away, I think, a little bit from the idea of looking at it in terms of a black and white, we're going to cull, we're not going to cull, right? Because in part, we have to establish, again, what people are seeing and the scope of the problems that people are seeing to help us. Well, and the thing being from what already with the conversations is that it seems like we have multiple problems. We have multiple concerns, different deer conflicts, right? Which probably is going to mean we're going to need multiple solutions. So kind of to Tom's point of saying having a holistic approach here. Because the reality is we're not going to eradicate the deer. And so even if we were to say this is a decision about culling, we're not going to get rid of all the deer. And so the various deer conflicts that people are potentially having, they're going to continue. And so are there other means to address those conflicts, reduce the risks of those conflicts, and help the community better understand what role they can play in doing that? For instance, is it a matter of doing better education for residents? So say you have somebody who loves seeing the deer out their window eating from the bird feeder because it's just such a majestic, peaceful thing to see, right? When the reality is that's not really healthy for the deer to even be doing that. We don't necessarily want to make it so inviting and welcoming on our property. And just because you appreciate seeing that, inviting and drawing that deer onto your property is encouraging them to be on your neighbor's property, and they're actually perhaps eating more of their property than in your own property. You know what I mean? And so it's just a matter of what can we really do to help educate people? So again, as was talked about in terms of these forums, a lot of what's going to come out, I think, is a matter of really just getting the community to understand and learn more about what we need to do. Because I certainly don't want people to, let's just assume for argument's sake, we went the route of culling. I would hate for people to feel like, oh, shoo, problem solved. I can go back to planting my tulips without problem. Because that's not realistic, and that's not necessarily, you know what I mean? And so now, in terms of some of the confusion as far as even if we were to go down the route and why we have the importance of even establishing benchmarks for us, if we were to go to the route of culling, we as a village would not submit the application to the IDNR to get that approved. The forest preserves would have to submit an application, and their application would be based on damage to forest preserve property, right? And so some of my questions and some of the questions that came up when we were talking about the IGA that had been brought to our board table back in November was, how do we evaluate what success looks like for residents? Because, you know, yes, we were hearing an increase of concerns that people were having. And so this IGA was drawn up that had a 5-year plan of perhaps culling over five-year period based on what the forest preserve was seeing on their land. But yet the village was going to pay for this. My question had been, what happens if after, say, years 1 and 2, people aren't really experiencing the same amount of conflict or concerns after those 2 years? do we really want to use our tax dollars to continue to pay years 3, 4, and 5 if we're not having those same concerns, right? We could use those tax dollars probably anywhere else, things that we want to see have in our community. So it was important, and doing research, and I'll guide you to one of the websites that was presented to us as a good resource to help further explain the importance of having to establish what are the problems, and the problem's not the deer. It's what the deer are perhaps doing in our community, right? So what are the problems? What's the scope of the problems? You know, is it all just happening in the north end of town? Are things happening, you know, all over? I live on 700 Bonnie Bray. I've been there, as I said, for about 20 years, so just down the block from you. Once in a blue moon, you might see a deer, but really not. This past spring, summer, we had a lot of activity on our block, and, you know, they are creatures of habit. I can almost tell you what time it was based on the time that I saw the doe go across my yard. We had a house across the street. Two babies were born, which was awesome. It was kind of cool to see them in there and to see their interactions. But so I certainly knew, at least anecdotally from my experience, that, wow, they're this far east on my property. And I often saw, like you're saying, the bucks in that.
Yeah, there were four there.
Yeah, they would hang out, and then they would come down to my yard. They'd kind of wander in my yard. They weren't necessarily eating my stuff, but my next-door neighbor, they were eating her stuff. So she was beside herself with, and she tried, you know, various things to try and keep them out of there. So I do know there were some changes in patterns, absolutely. And so, but again, establishing what's the scope of this? What's the scope of what we're seeing? So as we kind of go through our initial direction and what we're going to have you work on, and somewhat out of order here, but is kind of educating yourselves, doing some work on through these websites we're going to direct you to read that material to kind of have a broader sense of the importance of having a committee like this work on it. Because this is going to be an ongoing thing, because again, no matter what we decide, we're going to want to continue to evaluate and continue to capture data year to year so that we can make decisions year to year as far as what's working, what's not working, what should we be doing more of, less of. And so to that end, and we'll discuss it further, but we're going to be drafting a survey that we can use to gather some of this data from residents. And it's going to be really important that we can come up with a good survey that we feel is going to capture the best information, evaluating that, encouraging as many residents as possible to participate in that so we really have a good data set. And so anyhow, that's, and so I guess what I will also say, and I get a sense because you all do seem like you're really coming at this and you really wanna, and so I think one of the points I was going to make is that if upon hearing that, it's gonna be a lot of reading on your part, it's gonna perhaps be you thinking about things as we're going through some alternative solutions, we may have you break down into like sort of sub folks, you know, so if somebody wanted to talk about what are some options to help people with their gardening and help them protect their vegetables and that sort of thing, is there an area that you guys might be willing to do a little bit more research or legwork on that we can come back as a potential solution that we can offer to community members? And so, again, it's going to take time. And so one of the points I was going to make is that if you had applied and we're not necessarily envisioning that we're going to send you lots of reading and things to be doing and things to be working on. Don't at all feel badly to say, you know what, I'm going to have to graciously bow out here. Because in order for us to really get some good solutions, it's going to take what we're willing to put into it. And good work, thoughtfulness, you know, really reflecting on how can we help the community? How can we work together to recognize that we have this community issue? How can we solve it as a community and do it in the best way that makes the most sense economically, you know, emotionally? How can we do this to kind of help the community understand what's going on and why we need to do what we need to do? And so when we get to the point of making some decisions, that we can feel good about pointing to, this is what we have to do and why. And even when somebody may not at the end of the day really agree with that, I think they're more accepting of it if you can really answer that, here's what we have to do and why. Okay, so that's that on that. All right, you want to talk about that?
So since we are a body created by the Village Board, we are subject to the Illinois Open Meetings Act. What it requires generally is that we meet in the open. It's the best way to summarize it. We have to have our agendas out 48 hours in advance of the meeting. There can't be communication between a majority of the quorum of the board. So if we are, we will soon be 15 members. So that means no more than four people can be on, eight is a quorum. So no more than three people can be on the same email where you're communicating. Now we will be sending out some emails, which are just BCC to you, which is like we did today with the phone numbers and stuff. That's not technically committee meeting or committee communication. That's just simply providing you with information. But generally speaking, when you meet, we meet here, and we meet in the open, and we give everyone an opportunity to hear what we're having to say. That's the whole point of the Open Meetings Act, so that we can't govern in privacy. I mean, I know we wouldn't, but sometimes you get the, like, what always happens is someone will start an email, and then they'll copy people to the email, and then that email suddenly becomes viral, and everyone gets it, and that is a communication between board members, so we can't do that. I will be conscious. I was going to put a disclaimer in what I sent out today, and I forgot, and I apologize. Basically about that this isn't a communication, so there's the Open Meetings Act. But let's just be careful about that. You guys are all going to be required to take an online open meetings class. I think it's 20 minutes. It's not very difficult.
It's not very long.
And really, the Open Meetings Act is sensitive. It's just, like I said, you can't talk in private if you're going to make decisions about things that affect people. So that's pretty much it. We have to... At the end of the day, I think the only substantive vote we have, according to this, is the report itself. But, you know, we'll be following normal Robert's rules, but we will be voting on everything as a committee that we do. So, for instance, the final version of the survey will be the product of a committee vote. So hopefully we can get at least half of the members to agree on what the survey is going to say. But that'll be with as to everything. And so for us to meet, we have to have a quorum, which is eight people. And that's about all I can think of for the Open Meetings Act, unless anyone has any questions.
I do. You mentioned during the Open Meetings Act, and I look forward to seeing all of the rules because I didn't know about those. You had mentioned that you're thinking of breaking down into subgroups, subcommittees.
Potentially. I mean, that's, again, we're going to kind of, through our conversations, then what makes most sense.
Sure.
And if we keep the subgroup below four people, that they would not be subject to the Open Meetings Act.
Okay, so
it's a majority of the quorum, so it would be five people with a quorum of eight. It would be five people would be, so four people of this committee can meet together without being subject to the Open Meetings Act.
Correct. I see. So if you do a sub, that's where I get confused.
Right.
If you do a subgroup,
right,
four and under, you don't have to worry about,
right,
communication.
As long as we don't have something with, I mean, we won't have committees with five or subcommittees with five. So that solves the Open Meetings Act problem.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
I have a quick question.
Yes.
So you said we have to have a quorum. When the votes happen, do all 15 of us have to be present or vote? Or if you can't make a meeting?
As long as there's eight members present, we can vote. We can actually take committee action.
Okay, thanks.
Right. Yeah, and then the other thing was, which it was on my email, but if for some reason you can't come to a meeting, but you're either sick or out of town on work, you can call in. If you're on town, unfortunately, according to board policy, if you're on town, out of town for vacation, you can't call in. I'm not sure why that we have that rule, but and it actually will impact Patty next at our next board meeting because she's going to be out of town on vacation. But that's what the rule is. You can always, if you miss a meeting, you can always listen. The video, the audio tapes of our meetings are on the Village's website. I'm assuming we have a tab now, Sarah, for the subcommittee, or for the committee, rather.
Well, it would fall under, if you were to go to this calendar of meetings, it would be in...
Oh, no, I was just thinking, there's the one section with all the board committees. Well, if we can do it through the calendar, I'm fine with that. I just want to make sure that people can access, if they want to listen to the videotape.
Oh, yeah, it would be through the calendar. It would be through the calendar. They could access it.
So there's the, is it the community calendar or is it the village calendar?
No, no, so it's the calendar of, if you go to our website and click on agendas and it
shows
you.
I don't think that's there.
It should be. It should be, because we're listed as a public meeting, so it would show agendas, and I could look right now.
Sorry. Have another question.
We have somebody here.
Hi, Joel.
Hi, this is Joel Lukin calling in remotely.
Hi, Joel. How are you? Can you hold on 1 second? We have to make a motion and approve your joining the meeting by telephone. So just give us a second for that. Can I get someone to make a motion to permit Joel, who is currently working in California, to join the meeting? Yes, actually, do it. To join the meeting by telephone?
I'll make a motion for Joel to join the meeting by phone.
Because he's out of town on vacation.
Or he's out of town for work.
And can I get a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Welcome to meeting, Joel.
Welcome, Joel.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for calling in. We're sort of almost through the agenda. I knew you said you wouldn't be able to get to us till later, but do you want to just introduce yourself? We also shared with everyone on the committee our favorite thing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Sir, can you turn this up?
My name is Joel Luking, and I live at 1405 Thatcher. I actually came back to River Forest. I had grown up there, and I've been back for, it was 6 years next week. And my favorite thing would be my favorite place in York County, Wisconsin. I love spending time up at the cabin and being on Lake Michigan.
Joel, just briefly, could you share with the committee, I mentioned what you'd written on your application, but just share with the committee your experience in this regard?
Oh, sure. I think we're going on 12 years. I've been working with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and one of their local wildlife biologists, and then a volunteer deer management archery hunting group from central Wisconsin that works with private landowners and associations and municipalities and performing deer control hunts. I'm the president of our landowners association on an island off York County next to Washington Island called Detroit. And for a number of years, we've had a serious problem with deer overpopulation. And we also had a pretty aggressive Lyme disease outbreak. And so we started looking for answers and turned to the state. I've worked with a number of scientists from New York as well, who are well studied in the issues. And it's just been a very interesting ongoing journey for us, but we've made some great progress and things are getting a lot better for us. Our forest is a lot healthier and the deer are a lot healthier too. So it's been an interesting multifaceted project for us, for our landowners association.
Just to bring you up to speed where we are, we talked about the resolution that established the committee. I'm not gonna go over everything because we can talk about this offline, but the resolution that established the committee, basically our charge is to do a community survey, to research alternate ways to manage the deer, to do at least one forum. We plan on doing multiple forums to educate the community, and then ultimately to do a written report to the board with the recommendations of the committee on addressing the issue.
That's fantastic.
Patty had some materials that she shared with everyone. I think we can email them to you. I'll let you
start. Right. I was able to attend one of the village board meetings a few weeks ago, where the ad hoc committee concept, I believe, was approved by the board. So I think I've got a pretty good idea of the goal.
Okay, and we'll
attending that meeting. Yeah.
Okay. Good. There's actually a few folks who weren't able to join us tonight. So, yeah, we'll be sure to make sure the materials provided tonight and future materials are also available to people via email, so you have access to all that. Okay.
That's great.
Well, thank you for joining us remotely.
Yeah, no problem. I'm just sitting on Interstate 10 right now.
Oh.
We're working out here this week, and I actually don't come back till Saturday, but I'll be back in town next week, which is good. So it's a lot of travel lately.
Right. Okay.
So that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
One more question. You keep referring to an email we sent of information. When did you send?
You were not. I didn't know you were going to be a committee member. It was to the 11 people that were appointed. It was just simply the call-in number.
Ah, okay. Never mind. I thought there were more. There was more information
that was
on it.
Pretty much all that's been.
Thank you.
Sent out right now. Okay, our next agenda item as far as resource materials, and I think you all have the sheet that has the resource links, and again, Joel, we'll get this to you, but there are a number of websites that I had throughout the course of all of this been referring to. This very first one, the Community Deer Advisor, this is along with the Cornell University and the Nature Conservancy, they developed this website that is just a wealth of information. I mean, it really is a good resource in terms of, again, talking about some of the background and the importance of, and so of doing a committee like this. And so some of these highlights that I've printed here, you'll find online. But the other thing that it has is links to other communities who have gone through this process and basically case studies in terms of what did they do to get started, how did they go about it, what came out of it, what would they have done differently. When you Google things in general in terms of other communities, you know, discussing the same topic, what it basically reinforces is, again, the idea that it's not just a black and white thing. And it can be a tough conversation for people. There's a lot to work at. You know, I mean, I know even in my conversations with people, off the cuff, people can have a pretty strong opinion. And then as we continue to talk and I'm explaining things that we have to consider and the nuances of some things, and all of a sudden, regardless of which side they are on, they were kind of seeing that there is really more to this than such a quick decision about where we fall one way or the other. So this particular website, as I said, in particular, has a lot of good information that I really highly encourage you to please read through, because it really does help reinforce this idea of, let's looking at this big picture, what are all the various things we should be considering. There's links beyond that they also provide as far as further resources that you can, so you could certainly, you could go days and weeks, I'm sure, reading information. But if you can focus a fair amount on that, would be very helpful. The Humane Society link here, and I see that Osgood is actually, as far as I'm, for me, was who introduced this particular resource. It's also a very helpful bit of reading in terms of thinking about, again, identifying what the problems might be, thinking about alternative solutions that we might be able to implement. In here specifically, they give suggestions in all different areas of potential conflicts. I personally don't know some of the suggestions that they give. You know, are they in fact effective? What do they cost to implement something like that? What we would perhaps ask you as committee members to do is to, if there's something in particular that you think looks like this has some potential, to do some of the work on researching that and kind of fleshing that out a little bit. One of the suggestions in here in terms of addressing the issue with the tick and Lyme disease is there's apparently, and again, I don't know how effective, what it costs, whatever, there's a four-poster bait station that actually encourages the deer to enter, and then while they're there, somehow there's something, I don't know if it gets sprayed on them, I haven't done a whole lot of research, but it essentially forces the deer to go through this bait station that then helps to actually kill the tick on the deer. So you're actually using the deer to help remove the ticks and kill those and help, you know, one of the issues that we find with the deer. And so Tom and I met with the Forest Preserves and IDNR last Friday, just so we can kind of have a reset and talk about where we're at, make sure that we're all kind of on the same page in terms of expectations, next steps, get a sense of, you know, we had shared that we don't necessarily want to have you do all this great work, like the idea of this bait station, which is most likely going to have to be on Forest Preserve property, only to find out when we go to the Forest Preserve, yeah, no, that's not something we're going to consider doing, you know what I mean? So we wanted to get a sense of what are they going to be open to doing or not before we go down that path. So there are, I think, some, you know, as far as addressing potential collisions on Thatcher, there are suggestions here about improving the signage, having it light up. There's apparently some types of like motion detector lighting that gives an appearance of a fence to help prevent the deer from crossing the road then at that point. Again, what are the costs? What's the effectiveness? I don't know, but it's something that we could look into. Yes.
So I took a drive up Thatcher the other day, and there were two signs in front of Dominican, and there were two signs between Madison and Linden. There was nothing on that whole stretch after you got past Dominican. So first of all, there's no signage, really, and it's quite dark. I don't even think you need to do anything super fancy. I think you need to just remind people, because that's where I see the deer. You know, if you're coming out, if you've been up at Dominican in the evening and you're coming out, it's beyond there. So, I mean, that's one thing that I think would be, like, low-hanging fruit. The other question I have is about, like, Lyme's disease and some of these parasites and diseases they talk about. So when I was trying to find information online, I couldn't find anything that, you know, suggested that there are, like, outbreaks or any Lyme disease in this area. Now, I could be wrong because I don't know where to look, but I was like, before you would go and spend all this money spraying the deer, if the, for instance, the thing, they have something called wastage disease. It's not even, at least when I was looking online, there was nothing like in this area. So I just think you need to find out what, if there's a problem with a particular thing, you know, not go chasing your tail, trying to fix something that's not actually really an issue. So I feel like we need to get more data. So there should be reports. I couldn't find anything current, but I feel like they must have reports through the state of Illinois. Mm-hmm. But I like this. I think this is really good. But I do think there must be something out there. Another thing, I was curious because I've been here, you know, 23 years, which I can't believe, but here I am. Has there been an increase in the deer? Or is it just people have reached the tipping point where they're like so frustrated with the deer, like getting into their yards and tired of the deer eating the hostas or whatever? But I'm curious if there's been anything documented that there's been actually more.
I can only say anecdotally, I live in Williams, so 3 blocks from Harlem, and I had never seen deer on my block until this year, I think was the first time, you know, well, yeah. Now 2019. One of the goals of this committee is to develop that data. So okay. We don't currently have
it. Another thing I read, deer like to migrate like 28 miles, according to the site that was in Illinois Wildlife Management or something. So we get rid of the deer. We do stuff here, but you got to realize that I live along the train tracks. So the deer, that's a wildlife corridor. So how do you prevent the deer coming from the northern suburbs? They're just walking, you know, just going where there's food. I think the big thing is like discouraging people from feeding them. Like I that's just not a good idea. And like you said about the bird feeder, I think rethinking how you protect your yard.
Right.
But that's just, those are some of my questions about this.
Some of the information that you'll find as you're reading the same things that I've shared is that in terms of focusing on the numbers of the deer, it's not exactly the approach that they recommend that you even look at it in terms of the concern. The way things are presented is they talk about when you get to the point of feeling like we have to do things to manage the deer, it's not exactly about the numbers and trying to get to this magic number, right? It's more about, again, what are the issues that people are having and what's the tolerance level to needing to address that? And that's kind of the point of the survey and getting a sense of where the community is and what people are experiencing? Yes, and then we'll go back to you.
One of my biggest concerns with this is that we want to be so data-driven on historical results and things that you can point your finger to. My fear is that we wait for someone to get killed swerving from a deer on Thatcher before we decide to do something about it. We need to, before something catastrophic happens, we really need to think about it. And not everything is going to be a data point that we can point to that we need to consider. I mean, living here virtually all my life, they were not like this ever. It was a big deal to see a deer you saw a couple times a summer. I see him 3 times a day. So, and just driving down Thatcher is my concern. You know, someone swerving to hit a deer, and you can argue it's already happened. There was a couple killed on Chicago Avenue in the 90s. The last name was Tringle. They were driving east on Chicago Avenue, I believe, in between First and Thatcher. They swerved into the electrical box, and the only conclusion they could come to was that they swerved to avoid a deer. So those are not things that necessarily you will find as facts or written facts or numbers you can point to, but a concern that should be addressed in being proactive rather than reactive.
Right. If I could just chime in, I recall there was a scientist from the Thatcher Woods Cook County Forest Reserve District by the name of Vogel, and he may very well be able to provide us with some more information about the herd size in our area. And I do agree that they certainly will migrate. That is documented. But as far as any scientific data, I think it'd be wise for us to turn to the Forest Reserve District, because they have been studying this issue in other areas for quite some time. So they may be able to certainly help us. And I can tell you, having coming up on 6 years living just 4 houses north of Dominican, there's been significantly more damage to my property and more sightings of deer on my property since the time I moved there. So I don't have hard data at this point, but I'm certainly, based on my own observations, I'm seeing a lot more deer in the last few years, no doubt. But as far as what the herd size is in our immediate area, I would have no idea. But Mr. Vogel could provide us with some help in that regard.
The goal of the committee is to get this data. I mean, we don't have it yet. I'll be honest with you. I mean, that was one of the problems in this process, that we could be deemed to be putting the cart before the horse because we were going off more anecdotal experience than data-driven experience. So that's what we're working on. I mean, you are right. There's some low-hanging fruit that we probably should deal with quickly, because it seems as though the problem is more acute, at least again, anecdotally from my impression. The problem is more acute in the summer. I haven't seen a lot of by my house. Now, I know that there are still deer in more northwest River Forest, but again, I'm eastern River Forest. I haven't seen many since the fall around my house. So, but that's what we're striving for. I mean, what we want to have is we want to be able to answer these questions that everyone's asking, but unfortunately, we can't answer them right now. But Julie, you're next.
Great. Right. I was going to make 2 points. The first, really just building off what everybody's saying, is my question is, do we have an expert that is either going to be coming here as a neutral person that's not on the committee that can advise and ask questions in a neutral way? So that was my first question. And then my second statement would be, I understand there's some anecdotal that it's going to bleed into this. I could sit and give you testimony because my office window faces the forest every day. So I can tell you how many deer walk by but what I'm interested in is what data sets are we going to look at? Could be some anecdotal, could be the, residents, survey results, could be, Lyme disease cases, accident cases and things like that. What point will we agree of what data sets we need, right? To then kind of move things forward, right? Because the sooner we agree on what are the keys to success here, the sooner we can get to kind of maybe there are some quick conclusions and then there's some longer term things that we want to take a little bit more time for. So that's what I was going
to
say.
To answer the question, there's sort of two different variables at work. So the Forest Reserve has its data. That's what they will use to justify their decision to seek the permits.
Yep.
Ours is different because they're going to go off of habitat. So as the survey, and having listened to Tim from the DNR say, there's a survey they do. So they go around the land where the deer are, and if there's damage to a certain percentage of plants, they determine that the habitat itself isn't currently sustaining the deer population. Mm-hmm. So the Forest Preserve, at least, doesn't do numerical surveys. I know they use the word survey, but they don't do them. And they've never done them. That's their deer management program doesn't include that. And from what Tim had said, and you can disagree, but basically the habitat condition is a better indicator of overpopulation than just a survey. So you could have a million deer in a spot, but if there's enough trees for them to eat, it's not a problem. So there's that. But then from the village's perspective, obviously we're somewhat indifferent to the habitat conditions in the Forest Preserve. Our concern is more the incidence of deer in car accidents is obviously the most egregious, but property damage. So what I was thinking of, the survey will do one thing, but what I like to develop is what I call a deer incident report. It would be on the village's website so that if a River Forest resident encounters a deer, just give us the basic details so we can sort of do a heat map on where the deer are. Again, this is going to be anecdotal, but I think if you get enough data, it at least gives you a more clear picture than just your neighbor saying, I saw deer today. So that was again, that's a committee decision, but to me, that he's next.
No, I know we'll ask Code and John, but just...
Go ahead and finish.
No, go ahead. We'll come back to this. Go ahead.
Oh, I thought you were going to want to finish because you were interrupted.
Oh, was I interrupted?
Yeah.
No. I was going to finish talking to your point of the data points. This City of Ann Arbor website, on their village website, they have a very robust section on deer management. And one element that I found pretty interesting, pretty fascinating to look at, actually, is they do have a map of incidents, and it's color-coded by year. So you could see the 1 year, click the next one. Now all of a sudden you see the different colors from year to year. You see the migration of accidents and things that happened in different areas and then that's what led them as a community to see that we've got to do something and what does that look like, and then all the different points to that. But we'll come back to finishing this because I do want you guys to have an opportunity to talk.
Essel was next.
Okay. So yes, I agree, Lori, with you, what you said, that we do need some sort of basis, and Julie and the two of you, because we do need to have some sort of basis of making a decision. And the fact that you're talking about what are the conflicts, what do we need to look at, it's not necessarily a matter of a certain number of deer. It's more of what's happening. And perhaps there are other alternatives that are illustrated in those websites, which I've seen, and this, including a very good public survey. So a lot of the work that the Patty is talking about has already been done. So we just kind of plagiarize it and let nothing evade your eyes. Just take everything.
Pick pieces that work for you.
So I agree with anything in life, in business, in science, you start off with a basis. You just don't go willy-nilly trying to find whatever problem it is that solution that you like is going to solve. You want to find a problem, identify it, identify options, pick an option or maybe two. So thank you for that. In terms of, and I've heard, and just as an aside, and I've heard that within the last year or so, there's been a huge increase in deer. One of the meetings that we had experts from the, I believe it was the environmental group, which outlined the fact that River Forest, the Thatcher Woods area, is a marshland. It's a wetland. And during the spring and early summer of this year, that whole area flooded. That pushed the deer out of the woods into River Forest. So perhaps that's where you're seeing the increase.
We had worse floods in River Forest than we had last summer.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember in 86 it was
But anyway, going back to the fact that we still have to work on the conflicts versus the deer numbers. And that's really what I think, and I agree with what you're saying, is we do need to look at the conflicts. We just can't go, say, pick one solution and go for it.
Sure. No, I think these are all excellent points. You know, I could, from a comparative standpoint, If you look at the front bushes of my home at 1405 and compare them to the bushes of the home, one house to the south of me, you'll see a drastic difference. And part of that is to do with winter browse. I began netting my front bushes about 3 or 4 years ago, and my neighbor does not. And you can see a very well-defined, significant, rather severe browse damage to their bushes versus mine. So that right there, you know, is
That's
kind
a
of a
solution.
Barometer, an indicator that I've been using to monitor browse activity. I've caged, as you'll see, I've also got two seedlings in my front yard that I've had to cage or else they'll be destroyed. But there are some tools that, you know, we can use, and I think the survey is spot on. I think everything I've heard makes good sense. I had researched the four-poster pesticide applicator for our landowners association, and we did consider it. We ran into problems obtaining the appropriate permit from the Wisconsin DNR, and that was also extremely expensive. And the state did not end up authorizing us to even submit an application due to the type of pesticide that's used to kill the tick on the neck and ear region of the deer. So I can speak very briefly to that. Not to say that it's not something that we should not consider. I just wanted to let you know what my experience had been with that option in Wisconsin. But certainly the more we consider, the better, and I'm all for establishing some baseline data sets that would really make sense for us.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. Thanks,
yeah.
Joel.
Yeah. Thanks. And I know we're probably getting into more of the weeds than we really wanted to on the first meeting. I did want to mention, Lori, one of the issues with actually documenting Lyme disease is that it's really not online. There's no information. The CDC doesn't have information on Lyme disease specific to river forest.
No, they do.
Hold on. They don't. And we can talk about that another time. But so one of the things I will do is introduce some other readings. Some of the foremost Lyme experts in the world, I've read their books. And I will introduce that reading to this group, and I hope that you'll, you know, that we can introduce more reading and we can do some more research. But I'd say that the and I don't want to get into it at this meeting because I don't think we want to, but there'll be plenty of time to talk about it. So but that is something I just wanted to address. And then secondly, I mean listen, I was out last year walking the dog. I live by Dominican. I counted 18 deer grazing by the shrubs over on Park Street. 18. So, I mean, clearly there's an increase in population. And then I wanted to ask Patty, does the Forest Preserve analyze the health of the deer? I mean, is there any way we can analyze the health of the deer? Like, for instance, when one dies, do we do any of that? Like biological autopsy?
It's a good, I've not asked that exact question, but they have confirmed there isn't chronic wasting among the deer herd that's around River Forest. There isn't. Is not.
That's not what I heard.
I was just thinking, not necessarily crime waste, but are they getting plentiful food?
Oh.
Because
they do actually watch that. The other thing that they mentioned in our meeting the other day is they do also keep track of, they couldn't speak to what had been done specifically in our woods, but that the Forest Preserve does actually keep track of a count of tick and the type of ticks that are in the Forest Preserve. So that is something that they could perhaps provide information on, and the person from the Forest Preserve was going to check in terms of, is that something that they've done specifically in our Forest Preserves. You raised a good point with something that I was also going to say to everybody in line with the resource links that I've provided here. Because this is going to be a collaborative effort, and because we're not any one of us experts on all areas of what this conversation is going to be about, if along the way you do find a resource, a link, a pamphlet, a book that you think would be beneficial for others to read and have as part of our what we're considering, please feel free to share it with the two of us, and then we can get it out to the rest of the committee so they have access to it as well.
Is there a shared drive that we could like upload materials to and links that everyone could just have
good
access
idea.
To spare you a bunch of emails and circulation of that? So
let me get back to you.
Yeah, let's look. But that's
I,
a good
I can
idea.
Help you with that if you need.
Okay, that's
and
a good
Annette,
idea.
I'm gonna, you're next, but I just want Julie. I'm sorry. I didn't get a chance to answer your question. I meant to. The Tim Proust, who is the IDNR guy that for Northern Illinois that is responsible for wildlife management, he's basically going to be our expert. He's agreed to come to meetings and stuff like that, and he's objective because he's got no dog in the fight.
It just feels like we need. I get Joel on the phone. He's got some experience. It seems you know it's also a, it's personal slash maybe hobbyist. And Joel, I don't know you, so I'm making aspersions here, but somebody that like can neutrally come in and say, here's the information and here's the process, and you know,
and
help us out.
Tim has said is confirmed. I mean, he's. This is culling season, so he won't be here available till summerish, but we won't have any need for him until then anyway. So,
sure, that all sounds good to me. I think if I know who he
hey,
is.
Hey, Joel. Joel, can we stop you there a second?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I don't want mean to cut you off, but it with you being gone, it's hard for you to know or for us to know when you're going to start talking or for you to know who is in line to talk next. So I am going to put you on pause just so we have the opportunity for other people to talk, and then we'll get back to you. So hold that thought. Go ahead.
Please do.
Mine is, I have a confusion, and it might not be even able to be addressed right now, but I agree there's plenty of websites that you can look at, and it actually gives you timelines of what how they got to where they are, the year progression. I mean, it's pretty how it walk you through the year to year, which I think is great. But my confusion is, what is the forest preserve? What is their responsibility and what is our village responsibility? Like, who has the ultimate say? When we do all this research and we come to whatever everybody decides is the best way to do all this, do we have to then ask the forest preserve since it's ultimately their property? And then who is responsible for the money for that? And then who is responsible for the hiring of it? I know this is all way ahead of whatever, but it's just, it kind of is, it seems like we're separate, but it's really a together thing.
Yeah, cool fact I learned. The state of Illinois owns the deer. The Forest Preserve owns the land, and we live next door to the land. So the process would be, we would ask the Forest Preserve who would ask Illinois, the IDNR. So, and we would be paying for it. The Forest Preserve, they do have culling programs, but this is not an, I'm quoting, I believe, this is not an area of priority. So in other words, they have unlimited wants and limited means. Actually, at the meeting we had, the guy emphasized to us that they were $10 million short in their pension payment. So that explains why they're not addressing the problem here. There are other areas of the Forest Preserve where they feel the need for culling more acutely. And it's mostly south in Bussy Woods are the two places. So we would be paying for it.
The proper procedure is us to go through, figure out what would be best for our immediate village here, and then present to the Forest Preserve, and then move forward from there.
In terms of separate solutions aside from calling, are decisions that we can make as a village. So if we along the way decide there's some things that we need to put in place, like for instance, immediate improvement on the signage on Thatcher, or some other thing that we think that we can take immediate. I mean, I agree with your concern in terms of the concerns about a potential accident on Thatcher, but we have to keep in mind, and this is what we need to be sure that we're communicating with residents. Again, even if we were to cull, right? Let's say there's one deer living in the woods. You're still gonna run the risk of that one deer coming out at the most wrong perfect time, and we're going to have a concern. And so we don't want to, again, to have people think, okay, we've culled a bunch of deer. I don't have to be mindful about how crazy I'm driving down Thatcher. We want to educate people. And so, again, because it's not going to potentially happen for how many more months, what are we going to do between now and then for people to help protect themselves and be mindful of things?
Well, I think... I hope everyone can admit there's no perfect solution, and there is no way to eradicate all the deer, nor should we look for something that eradicates all the deer. But it's like saying just because you can't put a fence around every pool, should you not put a fence around 9 out of 10 of them, and won't that lower the chances of someone drowning? I mean, no, we can't get rid of every deer, but can we significantly reduce the number and thereby reduce the chance of an accident? I do worry that if you look at how quickly deer multiply, and they multiply by 50% a year. The University of Michigan did a study where they put 22 deer in a area with no natural predators, and in 7 years, those seven deer turned into 222. So the longer we talk, I mean, if we haven't even agreed yet that it's a problem, we should determine that quickly, because time is money with this. If there is, in fact, a problem, and we agree on that, the longer it takes, the more deer we're dealing with.
Right, but so the culling season pretty much is over with now. So so what we're looking for is a resolution. And again, as everyone has pointed out, there may be short-term things that we can do as a village that we have the authority. But when it comes to the – if culling is chosen, we don't have control over that. We can agree to do it. But at the end of the day, it's the forest preserve that decides they want it done, and that they've indicated they do. And it's the state of Illinois that decides how many permits they need. So, you know, we are basically, we have no control over the number of deer that would be culled if culling is the solution. That's completely out of our hands, because it's not our land and it's not our deer. So that's sort of where we're at. So we can't say, okay, we decided that the optimum number of deer is 30. We don't have that ability. We can't say to the forest preserve, we're only going to pay for 30, because then they're going to say, well, you're not going to shoot deer in my land. So that's sort of the challenge we have. It is... we're sort of operating with gloves on, because we don't control the entire process. We can control what we can control, which is, you know, changes we can make to signage, things, community activism, stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it's the forest preserve that will interact with the state of Illinois, and that's just out of our hands.
So we're going to do Catherine and then Dan.
So I realize we're going to be doing the community survey, which I think is fantastic, because I do think in these kinds of things you have to be careful, because the loudest voices in the community, I'm sure, are the ones being heard the most. But I have not been to the village board meetings. I've picked up on vibes of what, you know, the anger, what people are complaining about, but I only know my own stories, like all of you know your own stories from your own individual neck of the woods here. Can we see information on, like, what the complaints have been? How many complaints about what? I mean, is it gardening? Is it traffic? Is it everything? Is it equally divided? Because I feel like
it's hard
because I have my own head of what I see as a problem, but you obviously have a totally different problem.
That specific information we don't actually have.
So you didn't
keep the village is being more rigorous now, not so much in complaints. That's one of the reasons why I'd like to get the incident reports.
Okay.
But certainly there was a number of instances where the Public Works Department had been called out to deal with it, to take away a dead deer. Okay. It wasn't a car accident. The deer may have just died or whatever, for whatever reason, but they weren't tracking that. And so that was information that wasn't available. So we didn't really.
It's been gathered somewhat. It's, I mean, being Sarah more aggressively. Actually. And Sarah, I'm sorry. We should have been just sitting there.
And we should introduce the reporter, too. Sarah Pfeiffer. Sarah Pfeiffer is the gift. Tell us your title.
Management analyst and deputy clerk.
Yeah. Sarah is very helpful in terms of when we're getting information and printing all our wonderful cards and things. Great asset to us. So she will be joining us, taking notes at our meeting. So sorry, Sarah, I mean, we should have introduced you at the beginning.
So really, though, then everything is still kind of anecdotal.
Right, and so Sarah did go through, and the calls, as Tom mentioned, has been put together in a document. And so it's probably going to be a helpful exercise to, well, on one, analyze what was reported, get a sense of that, right? Map out where those incidents were happening, because there's a total of those, right? But I know when I was looking at them, there was an incident where you can kind of tell by the time and roughly the area where the two calls came in, you're essentially talking about the same deer. So it's not like you could say, oh, we have 50 calls. That means we have 50, you know, like that's an indication of number or even, you know what I mean? So there's that kind of information. We do have accidents that have happened that have been called in as an official car accidents, and an official report has been written. We have access to that data. And on our FAQs, it did show that we had a period going up a few years where the accident count went up to as high as 8 as far as being officially reported. Last year, it was actually down to 4. So in terms of a data point, and if that were to be our data point to show success, right, we've already gone from 8 to 4 as there being a reduction. Now, the reality is, to Tom's point, in terms of trying to document this more, and again, further education to the residents, is to really encourage people, if they had an incident, like even just swerving away from the deer, go ahead and report that. So we have that kind of information. If there was somebody that had an accident, but there wasn't any much, you know, wasn't much damage, was no big deal, they drove on, still report it. It can still go in our documentation as far as what people are experiencing. And then, of course, obviously the more serious ones that do get reported. We have the issue where a deer may have gotten hit by a car because they're dead in the street or dead on the parkway, but nobody reported it, nobody saw it. We obviously can't ask the deer. So we don't know what happened of how they died. So it's, again, a matter of really encouraging people, having a way for people to check in and report what they're seeing, so that can help us in our gathering information, to your point. Okay. Oh, no, Dan. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
Just the... I just was interested in the timeline. We're doing a written report, and you know, there was some mention about the urgency. So can you walk us through the timeline of this committee and when, you know, what do you see at the end? I mean,
the goal is to have the survey out by the beginning of summer, June, July-ish. And then we have our reports due. So the only hard date we really have is September 30th, when the report is due to the village board. So that's only a hard date. Ideally, to get the data working, obviously, the earlier we get the survey out, the better. So Patty and I had talked about a June-ish date for that. And then the rest of the stuff would be basically as the thing decides. So if we decide next meeting that we should change it, well, but that we should change the traffic signals on Thatcher, that's something we can recommend. At the end of the day, we can only recommend. I mean, we can say you can put up 1,000 traffic signs on Thatcher, but it's the village board that has to approve those things. But there is no hard, you know, fixed date for anything. When we have a solution, we can propose it.
So
wait, I'm sorry. He seems like, he seems like you want to further clarify something.
Okay. So you're saying that we can, or we can recommend to the board?
So we are not limited by the number of meetings we have, how often we want to meet. We can decide this as a committee as things are going along. Our very first critical piece that we want to make sure we move forward on as soon as possible is the survey we're talking about. And so between now and our next meeting, we want to encourage you to read through the information on these links that I'm sharing. We're going to share sample surveys with you that have been shared with us from the IDNR, so you can start thinking about what types of questions, what we would like our survey to look like. Both the Tim from the IDNR and I had a conference call with folks from the Humane Society are also willing to look at our survey to offer any input or not, to see if they feel like this is a good way to get the data we might be looking for. And so, yes, ideally, we would want to do this late spring, early summer, have this out to residents. Obviously, that's going to take some time for people to respond and get that information back to us. And then part of what we're going to need to do is to disseminate that, right, and kind of look at it and analyze it ourselves as a committee. Parallel to that happening is where we can be talking about some of these other potential solutions to help address concerns people may have. Hopefully sooner than later, having another public meeting awareness educational type thing coming into our busy deer activity season, that we can start educating people with some of the things that we've already been talking about that should probably be happening sooner than later. Also parallel with that, so when we're then, if there are, again, as you're reading through things, areas that you're seeing as possible solutions that you see might resonate with you that you'd like to further research, look into, help guide, help whatever, plan a forum, plan a meeting, plan a, I mean, we're kind of open to doing what we want. As recommendations come out through us through the course of the process, particularly if it means spending money on something, we would have to bring it back to the board for formal approval. That could happen at any point at our meetings. But to Tom's point, our very final charge as far as big recommendation, particularly in terms of culling, would be a decision and a report done by September 30th that would then come to the village board with what is our recommendation beyond. But some of this other stuff, this is ideally what, and again, back to the idea of people's time, and hopefully people are going to be willing to really invest some time in thinking about some stuff and be willing to take on some of these other roles to really help the community, help issues around what we're seeing here. So, okay.
So that's a great overview of the timeline. So thank you, Tom, Patty. I got it.
Yeah.
And the survey is really important. You mentioned numbers, right? If that's really important, you know, you could do dare cams. Just throwing that out there.
Okay.
People's Ring doorbells should be picking that up by now. There's so many more Ring doorbells, so you could certainly, you know.
Camp. You heard fun summer.
I thought you said camp as well.
I would suggest.
Maybe that's an idea we'll pursue. I mean. Okay, ask.
Actually, I have a question for Tom as a follow-up to one of the things you said, and then and I've got some information about CDC. You mentioned that there's certain things that we can do now, for example, something for traffic or some other thing. What are the items that you can do now as a city?
Anything we don't need the cooperation of the Forest Preserve or the IDNR. So if it's using traffic signals, we obviously a village have the ability to change our traffic signals throughout the village. That we don't need anyone else's consent for that. So the culling is really the only thing where we're limited in what we can do because we don't control that process. But everything else we can do.
So whatever solution,
assuming it affects only River Forest. I mean,
okay. So if we go down the list and there's three or four major concerns that the villagers have: landscaping, Lyme disease, traffic, etc. If we come up with options for those that we can implement, we can do those before the September timeframe. Okay.
Absolutely. And for a lot of this stuff, like the educational piece, the awareness of very about not feeding the deer, what to do if the kids are playing in the forest preserves, to be, you know, mindful of then checking for tick, or making sure that we're doing more educational awareness stuff, reminding people. You know, the other thing the IDNR shared with us in their presentation is the fact that the deer have varying behaviors depending on the season. And so there are times like the spring and the fall where they tend to be more out and about and seeing some of the behaviors that we saw. So again, reminders to residents, this is active deer season, you know, let's be careful going down Thatcher or throughout the community, whatever the case, you know what I mean? So absolutely, there's things that, so we can bring recommendations back to the board at any point for things that we want to do sooner than later, for sure.
That's good. We don't have to wait
until September. And yeah, I do. And I just want to talk about the issue of Lyme disease. And Lyme disease is horrible for anybody who gets it. It's a horrible thing. But we were talking about some of the data collection. Lori, you had mentioned that you couldn't find anything, and you said the same thing.
CDC, I did not say the same thing. I said you can't find it on the CDC.
Well, that's what I want to address. I've got printouts from the CDC website, county level Lyme disease data from. And this is yearly from 2000 to 2018, and also incidence rates for various different areas. So there is data out there. You just have to, this is the some of the stuff that we collected over the last 6 months. So there is data available. There could be more data by village. Dr. Liu knows some of the medical aspects of it. So unfortunately, she's not here.
Well, and again, this is going to be, and I know, John, you want to make a point, but we're not necessarily going to right now debate that.
Right.
This is all, again, part of our research and educating ourselves on this. John?
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's, I don't want to get into the weeds in actual, I mean, with all due respect, I've been studying this issue for the last 5 or 6 years.
Understood.
I can tell you that the CDC, according to the LMMDs that I talk to and that I read, woefully underestimate the occurrence of Lyme disease. And we'll get into why I say that in the research that I've done and the books that I've read, and I'll share that with you. But I don't want to get in an argument. The CDC has like 180 occurrences in Illinois alone. I know 9 people in River Forest. So the CDC is completely not credible when it comes to Lyme disease. And we'll get into that later.
Okay. Anyone else? We kind of covered the community survey.
Yeah, so I think so. I mean, like we said, we'll send you the samples.
I just wanted to comment. I think we should try to do the survey before summer hits. Before everybody hits on vacation. That was the only thing I was going to say.
That's a valid point, but here the challenge is, and I'm not certainly not essential, but Patty's going to be out of town for March, and I'm going to be out of town from April 6th to the 22nd. So that's kind of one of the challenges we have in timing this. I don't think it's going to take too long, and we could probably do a lot of it offline.
That's why we're here.
It shouldn't. And I think
you raise a really good point. It was just
before everyone kind of vaporizes.
And you want it sooner than later, just so that, again, if it's identifying things that other areas that we should be addressing, then knowing that sooner than later. So yes, we did touch on the surveys. We'll give you the sample so you could start thinking about it. So really, again, your charge between now and our next meeting, because as Tom said, we're not going to be meeting in March. You'll see it as far as our agenda item 7, meeting April 1st or 2nd. And if it's possible for people to kind of take a look at their calendars now to see if we can get availability on either of those dates. But between now and then, reviewing the links, reviewing surveys, thinking about, again, what we can, so that really at that next meeting, we can even do it as more of a working meeting to start developing those questions, getting some feedback from some of the experts. And really, if we can, once we identify a platform and the way that we're going to be sending out the survey, really ideally, if we can work out doing it by the beginning of May, you know, as soon as we could do it would be awesome.
Yeah,
It's really going to be a matter of how our time plays out and if we feel we can get
some good. Hey, I just came up with
that
date as something that seemed practical given the time constraints, but
right,
work for me.
We're not wedded to it, but
yeah, they work.
And I think with all the templates that you have, both on Cornell Humane Society, other the IDNR,
right,
it should make the make the work a lot easier because you just kind of pull everything together.
Probably the hardest part about the survey is going to be getting responses, and this is where it's going to take all of us, and then some, to really encourage residents to participate. And I'll find it because I know I've been jumping through so many email or sources. Impressing on residents again why it's important that they participate in the survey.
It's going to help
inform us on what sort of decisions that we're making, that we're going to make, that in some cases are going to have a financial impact, right? And so we want to make sure that we're getting as much information as possible, looking at these things and really being able to decide in an informed way. So the more input that we get from residents, it's just going to make it that much better to...
We really are sort of ambassadors for the village on getting residents aware of this and getting them to respond, show form. So it's kind of incumbent on all of us talk to our friends and neighbors and say, look, this is what we're doing. Can you try and get back to us on this? That's why the committee is as big as it is.
And I agree. Talking to friends and neighbors and residents, that's going to be key, because otherwise a lot of people don't look at the website. A survey thing comes in on email. You have a delete button.
And so it will be
it's hitting people multiple ways,
right?
Multiple times, finding them in different.
I mean, we use all of our traditional means of communication. There's the Village Monthly newsletter. There's the Facebook page, the Twitter page, the Instagram page. But for the most part, I think most people sort of glaze over that stuff. So it's important that we reach out to people and let them know that it's there.
Do you have a mailing list of all of the residents?
No. Well.
Don't we get mailings from the village?
There is the opportunity. There's mailing list, and sure. There's also an email list.
Email list is bad.
It's only if you're signed up for the e-news and have your.
What about post mail?
Post mail would certainly mean we have that mailings.
Yeah, I mean that would be water bills. So.
Oh yeah, the bills that I just paid.
And that's actually that will be an important piece as far as what we decide as far as the survey, because obviously if you were to do it as a mailing and expect people to respond back, there's going to be an expense to that. There are certainly platforms like SurveyMonkey that might be able to get us the same information, and so that is something in terms of the survey that we're going to have to consider.
Our budget on this is not unlimited, though. You know, we need to do this in a cost-effective manner.
At this point,
manner.
It's non-existent. So.
Yeah. So we need to be cognizant that we can't spend $40,000 to decide to spend $40,000.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
exactly.
Here's my question. So I get the mailings from the library and also from the school districts. Couldn't we just put a little thing in there about it?
You mean hard copy mailings?
Well, they already mail it out. Like, wouldn't they be able to? That might be it's a village concern, so.
It varies.
Yeah.
They have a whole pamphlet.
Yeah. So this would be really important that we get the survey created soon enough so we can make sure it could get out on one of those. Because it's a community issue. So I don't see why they wouldn't want to, help
well, certainly
support
we can look
it.
Into that. Annette?
Yes.
Just in sitting here, I can tell you're passionate about Lyme disease. You're passionate about that. I don't mean to make assumptions, but I can kind of see where people are headed. We all have our own thing, but I think what most people can wrap their brain around is money. And so I think, like, if the village knew somehow where their money was being spent, I mean, like, it's a hot topic for different people for different reasons, but we all have money invested in the village. And I think, I don't know how you'd get that across, but, like, maybe people would respond if they knew where their money was going, or I guess that's what I'm saying, because you're right, the people that are going to be heard are the ones that are really have an opinion about it, and the other people, if it doesn't affect them, they're not going to look through their library mailer, or they're not going to fill out the survey, because who cares about the deer? I mean I don't mean that, but I'm
no,
just saying, like,
you raise a very good point, because you're right, where people might not feel a direct impact. They may not feel it,
right?
Because they don't have a direct impact, they don't need to, but you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, we're going to be making perhaps decisions on spending tax dollars, which does have a direct impact on them. So they're absolutely going to want to be aware of and have a voice in.
I just think this has been such a hot issue. I really don't anticipate it being a huge problem getting survey results. I mean, you see the comments or posts to articles in the paper or to social media. And like you said, I mean, we just have to be ambassadors to reach out to people to get responses. I would be shocked if we didn't have enough, though.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps.
I was just going to say, do you want to go first?
Real quick. Perhaps we, before we even send out the survey, somehow get news out either by the library mailing or whatever normal mailing, or even the water bills, that a survey is coming. Look for it. We're trying
or
to do that.
Or
the newspaper. Or the newspaper. Or the newspaper. Yes, absolutely. Just to let people know, like, weddings, you get save the date things. So save your pencils to fill out the survey.
I'm not sure what the added cost is, but the issuance of the mailing out of the vehicle stickers would be at about the same time as the survey if we did it in June. But I'm not sure. There would be a cost of inclusion because it's an automated process. So there's just someone that stuffs it. So I don't know. I mean, that's something to consider.
Yeah.
But the water
bill
is the same thing. It's an automated process, so just putting another piece of paper in there does cost money.
it's not free, but it's.
But it's certainly something we can explore, and if it seems too whatever, then we have to.
Just to get the news across that we are going to be doing this survey, it's very important, as Annette said. Probably the biggest thing is going to be anybody's impact on their pocketbook, especially since we're getting increased in taxes. So,
That's not ours to talk right
now. Yeah, it's different subcommittee.
If you're done.
Julie?
The only thing I was going to say, and I don't know how you guys are planning on closing this, but are we looking to the survey to help us prioritize, right? Because I think we need to prioritize, right? Because there's a lot of burning issues here, but some of them are not as burning as others, right? And so, great. So that's sooner the better, and however we can help. And then I also think kind of a way to leverage technology to help us communicate and do readings and prioritize the readings, right? Because if you put like 10 things on Lyme there, tell me the top two, right? You know what I mean? That I can look at. But I want to be educated. And I think that's really important commitment to come in here and say, these are the five you have to read before you come into the next room. So we're not, everybody's not rehashing, you know, information that you've got, but we don't. And right. So I think that needs to be a commitment. But my real question was on the prioritization using the survey. Okay.
No, it is a good point. Besides, yes, prioritizing and helping inform us to make decisions along the way, as we're already saying with some of these solutions, it's also establishing benchmarks that we can use year to year. And so it's perhaps going to be an annual survey or some, whether it's people reporting when there's things that are happening, but we have to be able to, again, kind of look at what does success look like, which also means we also going to have to kind of get, which is somewhat hard to do, a sense of what does success actually look like. Is it no accidents in a given year? I don't know if that's realistic. Is it, you know, what number would be so-called acceptable to make us feel like we've shown success, right? And so, but it's having these data points that we can compare year to year. And so again, I'm going to refer you that Ann Arbor website, I think, is really helpful to look at what they've done and how they've mapped things for their community.
Can I get a show of hands? Who's better, April 1st for the next meeting?
Either.
Is there anybody that can't
conflict?
Do the first?
Yeah, is there a known conflict?
Joel?
You know, I unfortunately got that speaker, and I don't have my schedule, my planner open. I know I am traveling quite a bit in April, but I want to say I'm pretty sure I'm in that first week. So,
okay.
I can confirm that tomorrow. I'll send by email.
Sure, but either the first or second wouldn't work for you if you're out that week, right?
Right. As long as I'm not traveling, absolutely. I will make those dates work, and I'm fairly certain I am in town.
So I don't think we need a motion. Our next meeting will be April 1st.
Yeah.
April Fool's Day.
Stick to it.
Hot diggity dog.
We'll meet again at 7.
As long as we're,
7 o'clock. 7 okay? I mean, is it inconvenient? Would you prefer it early? We really can set this whenever we want. We just normally pick 7 because that's when we normally meet. But there's no reason we couldn't start at 6 if
7.
That works.
7 is good.
Okay.
Motion
to adjourn?
Right. Wait, before it, so are we fine? Everyone's fine? Okay, so reading resources, looking at surveys, coming out, perhaps something you may want to explore further or educate us on further.
So send it to you.
Okay. Yes.
And if you need help and want to talk about how we can centralize things, let me know. We all
just literally need a Gmail account, and then we can have a Google Drive, and we can share everything. So,
okay. So it would just be like just sharing like work you could do on a Google paper.
Yeah, and then we just decide that.
I know the Sustainability Commission has done stuff as far as sharing. So we'll just see how that's been set up.
If I have everyone's Gmails and all that stuff, I don't know the laws of, do you need to set it up because it's a Village Act? I don't have any idea.
We can talk about that. Yeah, let me know what the Sustainability Commission has done. No, because you have a valid point.
And we will. And we'll have a goal to send out our survey by the end, or to agree on the survey April 1st. That'll be the main.
No, no. I mean,
we'll send it out beforehand. Sorry, Tom.
Not to send it out by then, but
basically, this April 1st is when we're going to start talking about it. So read the surveys. If you have a survey you want to submit.
Yeah.
But that's when I envision April 1st just being our first round of talking about it.
Right. But you don't think we'll have closure by, because if we want to get the survey done by summer.
Right.
Yeah, I was getting closure in May.
Okay.
Well, I would say ideally on the first that we're really having a working meeting to hopefully have a good framework of the survey that, as I said, we could then share with these other organizations that can help us. And again, so we'll have the meeting April 1st, then you're done, you're out of town, but we could potentially even have another meeting towards the end of... Well, so maybe towards that last week in April, have another meeting to really finalize, and then maybe that 1st of May, then getting it out, if at all possible, that would be ideal.
Then I would suggest, and this is just my feeling, ultimately, I think subgroups is a really good idea. And then that subgroup can present pros and cons of the particular issue.
I think that would be a really good idea
as opposed to just randomly.
I was sort of envisioning that April 1st meeting as being more of an organizational in that sort of regard.
Yeah, same. Same.
Yeah, so I don't want to overload one thing. So I think that the topic, the discussion of the survey can be somewhat brief just so that we have a sense of where we're heading. And then I was sort of looking at April 1st as being an opportunity to have those sort of substantive discussions about how we're going to break ourselves up as a group. And, you know, that was my thought.
And will we be able to, you know, so in a normal organization, if you're running, you break off into little areas where, you know, some people are focusing on, but does that then breach the public?
We're in the same room. It'd be an open door.
Okay.
Well, and I would okay, so a couple thoughts, and not to go opposite of what you were saying. I sort of feel like our primary goal on the April meeting would be the survey. And then I would almost envision in terms of subcommittees potentially scheduling their own time outside of our to meet, and if correct, as long as under because you're right, at some point there's efficiency of time here. We don't necessarily want to be, so if we can have subcommittees, to your point, bringing in information that can be presented to the bigger group at another date, I do think is going to be more efficient for all of us and more productive.
Should we determine what the subcommittees are, though, at the next meeting?
Yes.
Okay, and identify the topic.
Right, that's what I would say. So if we can read the resources, read the surveys, think about what topic resonates with you or that you would like to do more research on, you know, just to throw out another, not to prolong us, but like around gardening. I'm almost wondering, the Good Earth actually just recently did a panel at the library on houseplants. Is there something there that they might be willing to talk about? And maybe they already do this. Do they have a section at their nursery that have plants that are... Okay, so is there a way to direct people there? Would she be willing to have some sort of thing there or somewhere else to help guide people in some of their plants? That is what I was envisioning. And it's also one of those, I also feel like with our committee, could we recruit people to help residents? You know, it's one thing to like direct people to a website and say, oh, here, buy this plant and this plant, if you're not really a plant person, but maybe you and maybe some others might be motivated to form a resource to say, hey, we'll come to your house and help you. I'm not saying, it's just a thought I'm throwing out there. You know what I mean? Like, this is something we can do to help our community and help each other. It's like, hey, I planted a lot of stuff and don't seem to have a problem. Let me come over and show you what you might be able to do. I don't know. I'm just, but yes, that's what I would see happening with our, okay?
I like that.
All right, any other, or are we good?
Move to adjourn.
Someone want to move to adjourn?
Adjourn, move to adjourn.
Okay, second?
Second.
Aye.
Oscar, aye. All in favor?
Aye.
Thanks, everybody.
Aye. Yes, thank you so much.